I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Eitan Krasilovsky. He is Southwest Region Director of the Forest Guild. Kathy Holian joins us. She is Santa Fe County Commissioner, one of the several Santa Fe County Commissioners. Chris Nystrom is Wildland Urban Interface Specialist with Santa Fe County. She's also owner of Fire Service Support. And we are talking about what it means to adapt to fire, to adapt to wildfire during drought periods, during climate change, in this beautiful world, namely northern New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So you are all working with something called fire-adapted communities. What does it mean to adapt to fire?
Well, it means to take responsibility for the risk that you live in. And, a fire-adapted community is going to mean different things in different places. And in New Mexico, we have a lot of communities that are doing great things to be adapted to the wildfire landscape that they live in. But we still have a problem, and we still have a long ways to go in order to get to the point when communities are prepared for wildfire, are ready for it when it comes through their community, and can recover from a wildfire without too much damage.
What are some techniques for adapting to wildfire, specifically for homeowners?
Well, there's a great national program called FireWise, and there's a lot of information on the internet about that. Homeowners who live in these high-risk areas should be reducing the amount of flammable things around their house. That could be their firewood pile. That could be a coyote fence or a wooden deck.
Patio cushions.
Patio cushions?
Yes.
Have you seen those things ignite?
They do. They do ignite.
Oh, my goodness. Things you don't think of.
And I think another thing is to clear out the needles, if you live in a forest, to clear out the needles on the ground around your house, too, because sparks can move, the fire can move, you know, using the needles as a vector.
I think it's important to talk about the fact that wildfires have always been with us. This is a natural cycle of nature, wildfires. And in the years of forest fire prevention, we've actually kind of made things worse in certain ways.
Yes, we certainly have, because we have done, well, a number of things. One is, in our forests, we've cut down the old growth trees. Before, what forests looked like is there were widely spaced old growth trees with grass underneath. It was sort of a savanna type atmosphere. But then we cut down the old growth trees, we allowed grazing, which killed off the grasses, and then the thing that we did that was the most drastic was to start preventing all wildfires. So now the forests are very overcrowded.
Overcrowded with old growth, new growth?
Well, they're crowded with a lot of new shrubs, and the trees are very close together, and we have a lot of what we call ladder fuels. And the reason that they're called ladder fuels is that they are a way of bringing the fire up into the tree crowns. So the fire climbs up the ladder fuels, and that's why we have these very destructive fires now that they call crown fires. And they burn very hot, and they burn everything.
Whereas natural wildfires in the past burn some things, but the forest remains alive.
Correct. The fires in the old days would go through, there would be dry grasses and maybe branches, tree branches on the ground. And so the fires would burn those grasses and branches, but they would not be terribly hot, and they would move very quickly, and the trees themselves would often survive.
I think it's really, really important to understand, and this is one of the things that has taken me a while myself to understand, is that while wildfires are natural, there's something really, for lack of a better word, man-made about these catastrophic fires that we're living through today. They're just two different phenomena.
Yes.
Never before in the natural history of this region has there been this much fuel in the forests? And so we have about 100 years of this of fuel accumulation in our forests, and it's both on the forest floor in terms of lots of needles and sticks, and also the very small trees that Kathy was describing that have crowded in the forest in the absence of fire, in the absence of the good fire that was on the ground.
And homes are fuel as well.
So. Yes.
Right.
And the fires burn so hot now that sometimes they even turn the soil into kind of a glass-like substance, and they end up killing everything, including all the microorganisms in the soil. So it's extremely difficult for areas to recover after one of these catastrophic fires.
Yeah, if you don't have soil, you're done. I mean, that just becomes dead land for basically the foreseeable future.
And then what you have happening is when it does rain, you have a lot of erosion and mud flows like we saw in Pecos last year after the Tres Lagunas fire.
Well, that's another thing to talk about. When you've got a wildfire, the fire burns, it does whatever damage it does to the forest, to people's houses, whatever. But then the downstream effects can be even worse.
So post-fire flooding is a reality. It's a reality for Santa Clara Pueblo, for Cochiti Canyon after Las Conchas fire, and also for Pecos after Tres Lagunas fire from last year. And so these are real risks, and they can persist for many years, not just the first year after the fire, very destructive events that are very hard to mitigate.
When we talk about forest management and the kinds of unnatural situations that you have when you've got way too much fuel in a forest, what are the most, how would we say this, like using the concept of biomimicry, like if we were to try to do what nature does and help it along to get the fire, get the forest back to what it naturally looks like, what are the best ways to do that?
So that's a great way to frame the concept. How do we get it back on track? And it's, you know, humans are imperfect. We're never going to do be perfect all the time. And so the best thing
you
can do, right, is reset it so that fire can play its natural role again. So the techniques usually involve removing a lot of the small and medium-sized trees that have crowded in over the last 100 years, focusing on those, you know, 100-year and younger trees, putting fuel on the ground, and then returning fire back into the landscape to clean up the ground, clean up the fuels that you've created on the ground, and also setting the stage so that if you have a wildfire after that, it stays on the ground and not up in the canopy where we can't fight it.
What do you mean by putting fuels on the ground?
So by cutting all those little trees, we're going to create what's called slash, which is, you know, tops and limbs and branches. And it can be you have to then reduce that fuel, and it's very low value. Sometimes it can be used as firewood or other wood products, but oftentimes there's so much fuel on the ground that you have to use fire to clean it up, either by burning piles or doing different types of burning techniques to clean up the fuels.
It sounds rather labor-intensive.
It is. It provides jobs, too.
Right. Jobs from the county, the city, whatever that region is.
Yes, including young people. And as a matter of fact, I think Santa Fe County has a program working with the Youth Conservation Corps to do projects like this.
Right. Yeah, every year for the last 3 years, we've gotten a YCC crew. They're 18 to 25-year-olds, both male and female, come out. They get trained up in basic firefighting. They get trained in a lot of forest management techniques, also in conjunction with the Forest Guild. They get sent out for assignments within the state for fires, and then they also do public land thinning projects. And they're just a great crew. And the kids that we've been getting have been absolutely phenomenal. Seven of them, I believe, so far have gone on to join the county fire department.
Ah, very interesting.
Some of them go on to volunteer with various districts within the county. So it's been a really awesome program. It's something the state does, and I think it's one of the better things that New Mexico has pulled off. It's a great program.
And it's training the next generation in a whole level of awareness.
Absolutely.
About fire. So when we talk about what New Mexico's natural forests looked like at one point and how they are now, what kind of dangers are we looking at in the coming, you know, this summer and in the coming years because of the overgrowth? I mean, these programs exist, but we're probably a long way from getting the forest to where they should be.
That's what keeps me up at night. It turns out that a lot of the communities that are in what we call the wildland urban interface are in the foothills, and that is the district that I represent in Santa Fe County. I often organize community meetings to talk about the fire danger and what communities can do to make themselves safer. And let me tell you, those are the most popular community meetings that I organize. Often it's standing room only.
Well, yeah, I mean, if what's at stake is every single possession you own burning in a fire, you know, you're going to show up.
That gets people's attention.
Gets people out of the house. But, I mean, if there is a catastrophic wildfire and your house is in the path, can, you know, clearing your patio cushions and stuff like that make any difference? It seems like sometimes these wildfires, I remember that fire a couple of years ago, that burned for so long and so fast. It was, I don't know how many miles an hour it was traveling, but it was terrifying.
So those fires are, you know, we can't stop those fires. Like the first day of Los Conchos when it burned over 40,000 acres in less than 8 hours.
Yeah.
And so there are no guarantees for homeowners that if you follow all the recommendations from Chris and from FireWise and on the Fire Adapted Communities website, that your home will be saved. But if there is a fire coming towards your community and you've done the work and your neighbors have done the work, it's going to make the job of the firefighters a lot easier, and they can defend your home rather than put their lives at risk for a home that isn't prepared for wildfire.
And it does make a difference. I worked up in Los Alamos when there was the Cerro Grande fire, and I knew a number of people who lost their homes up there. And a lot of it was because they hadn't taken the advice of the firefighters and they didn't clean up around their home, and they had a lot of pine needles right around their home. So a lot of the homes that burned down precisely because they did not firewise their home.
It's not necessarily a huge flame front that comes through and takes out your house. A lot of times it's embers, embers floating in from miles away.
Is that right?
Yeah, they land in that pile of little needles or patio cushions or what have you that's flammable around your house or on your house, and that's what ignites it. And when people are gone because they're running from a fire potentially coming at them, nobody sees this stuff happen. So the houses often burn without anybody being there. Nobody knows.
And so a great example, I have an aerial photo from the Black Forest fire in Colorado, in Colorado Springs, where the fire came down into a community, and not everything in a community burned. In fact, from the aerial photo, you can see a lot of trees and shrubs survived the fire, but the houses burned. And that's exactly what from Chris is saying. The houses are flammable. They're not prepared for the wildfire. They ignite, and the heat from that house burning ignites the neighbor homes. And even so, the homes ignite each other, and the trees and shrubs around your home may be fine.
Now, if you have an adobe house, are you better off?
Not necessarily. A lot of the adobe homes that I look at anyway have wooden portales. They have wooden
beams,
vigas and beams coming out of them. They often have portales with a lot of patio furniture. You know, gas grills right up against the house, things like that. The other thing with adobe is the adobe has a tendency to shrink. So the space in between the concrete that the home is sitting on and the adobe can sometimes have a little tiny opening, you know, a quarter inch. It's enough to get an ember in there and ignite the substrate of the house.
My goodness.
We actually had a garage go up like that about a year ago. So checking all your adobe and making sure the cracks are filled in, and garage doors are famous for this. the rubber stripping or whatever type of stripping it is that encloses that garage, make sure that is down on the ground and there's no gaps.
A quarter inch.
Little tiny areas. We ask that everybody screen everything, any vent that has access to the outside from the inside of the house. Just screen it. There's eighth inch construction screening that you can put against the vents, and that hopefully will be enough to keep an ember out. But they come at you like an orange blizzard. I mean, that's kind of what it looks like when these things are sailing through the air, and they'll get into any little crack and any little hole they can.
And you know this because you have been a firefighter yourself.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Walking through the orange blizzard.
Walking through the orange blizzard or being near it or, yeah, it's hot, it's dirty, it's fun. It's kind of what people do it for. It's just...
Firefighting is fun?
It's very fun. There's a lot of camaraderie that goes on there. It's you're with a team of people. You get along great. Everybody does their job, and it can be very exciting or very boring. It's a lot of hard work, a lot of long hours. You get real dirty and stinky, but it's an awesome thing to do.
Now, do you encourage people? I mean, is there a movement to encourage people not to actually build houses in the middle of the forest?
I don't know if there is one around here. I think what's built is built, and now we have to encourage people to take responsibility for where they built.
I think that the county, with the new code that it has, is really actually trying to encourage people to do more building as infill, you know, closer into the city, rather than out in the more rural areas. But it's going to take a while to really see the effects of that new code. And we have a lot of people who live out in the wildland urban interface now that we have to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, you can't unbuild those houses. Mm-hmm. And as you said before we went on the air, they all seem to be in your district.
Yes, they are.
So something that that we talked about in terms of being fire adapted is knowing your risk. And Chris did a great job of listing off a lot of risks around people's homes. And something that she developed that is really unique is a home assessment tool and database where Chris and other trained professionals will go out to a home site and do an evaluation with a homeowner about their risk and talk to them about ways they can reduce their risk. And that is a really great tool and a great moment for dialogue. So if you're interested in having a home assessment done, you can go to the County Wildland Fire website and schedule one.
Excellent. And for those of us who live on paved streets with fire hydrants in front of them and with lots of neighbors and stuff, that's not so much an issue except things like, I mean, basically preventing your house from burning down by doing stupid things inside your house, which right. is another story. But
another risk out there are all the electric lines that were put in many years ago, and some of them are kind of rickety now. Two of the worst fires that we have had in recent years had to do with down power lines.
Ah, yep, very interesting. This whole world of fire-adapted communities is a network within New Mexico, across many states. There are a whole bunch of coalitions and people working together. What does that look like?
Yeah, so back in 2009, the federal government started on a national cohesive wildland fire strategy. And it's a very big document. But it called for the creation and establishment of fire-adapted communities. The Nature Conservancy was a big partner in that group, and they decided to create a learning network around how do we become and how do we realize fire-adapted communities throughout the nation. So they established a learning network, and in 2013 and 2014, there were 18 hubs established across the country, and there's a hub in New Mexico with the Forest Guild, State Forestry, Nature Conservancy, and a whole host of other partners, and Santa Fe County and City of Santa Fe are obviously part of that. But the national network crosses, you know, from Southern California to Washington State to to Florida, Georgia, New Jersey, Minnesota, so in Texas, really covers all the fire-adapted ecosystems that we have in the country. And surprisingly, there's a lot of similarities where, you know, we may live near, the Santa Fe National Forest and have 2 million acres of wildland vegetation that's at risk to burn. Well, the community in New Jersey lives near 1 million acres of wildland vegetation that's ready to burn, and they have some of the same exact problems we do. So the idea behind the network is to get these hubs established and get them talking to each other and figure out solutions that can work in different areas.
Is any of this knowledge being taught to school children? I would think it'd be important for them to start learning that early.
Yeah, we have one lady in the department in the prevention division. Her name's Victoria Vargas, and she goes and does a lot of fire prevention stuff in schools. She's also working with me now in FireWise communities. We have one so far established in Santa Fe County. It's the Rancho Viejo neighborhood, and they just happen to have 4 schools in their immediate vicinity, so we're developing some programs to go into the schools with. And it ranges everywhere from grade school right up onto pre-college and IAIA, and so we're getting all that going.
The Forest Guild has a Youth Conservation Corps program for 16 to 19-year-olds every summer. And so this summer we have over 60 youth from northern New Mexico, and they also received part of their training was also in fire-adapted communities this year. And a lot of their work projects that they're doing on national forest lands around New Mexico are actually preparing for wildfire. Some of that's cleaning up areas that are at high risk, preparing for prescribed burns or controlled burns. And that's another element of being fire-adapted, is using fire when it's the right time and place to reduce risk.
Eitan Krasilovsky is Southwest Region Director of the Forest Guild. Kathy Holian is a Santa Fe County Commissioner. Chris Nystrom is Wildland Urban Interface Specialist with Santa Fe County and owner of Fire Service Support. And we've been talking about fire-adapted communities. If people want more information, where should they go?
The county website.
There is a lot of information at fireadaptednewmexico.org.
Fireadaptednewmexico.org. Thank you all for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you.
Thanks.